the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Good morning. Coming up, the Queen of Cream, Silicon Valley and the Pentagon, when loyalty's at stake and TikTok gets a ticking off. You can contact us by text to 51551 or email thebusiness@rte.ie or WhatsApp 087-032-3232. But first, she's designed for the likes of the Beckhams and Gwyneth Paltrow, cruise ships, yachts and planes. Interior designer Kelly Hoppen is estimated to be worth over £50 million. The granddaughter of a Dublin woman, she was raised between South Africa and London. Age 16, after her parents separated and her father died, she left London for South Africa to live with a band. Kelly joins us now. Kelly, your dad was involved in the fashion trade. Your mum was a book dealer. Was it inevitable you would go into business?
Do you know, it's an odd thing. I often wonder about that. I think it's more about how you're brought up and your sort of the way your parents are with you. And because my parents both worked and started from nothing, I was always surrounded by that and meeting interesting people and going to museums and traveling. And I think it was just instilled in me that you worked. And I had a passion for interiors way, way, way back when I was very young. And my mum would say to me on a weekend, what do you want to do? And I'd say, can we go and look at show flats or go and look at, you know, yeah, I know.
It's that bizarre, was unusual.
It was really, really true. And it was when I saw a before and after picture in a magazine, I became obsessed with it. So at the age of 13, when I sort of changed my room from pink flowers to something else, my mother said, do you want to design it? And I said, yes, I did. And that was kind of where it started. So when my father died, I was offered a project doing a small kitchen for my stepfather as friend. And from there, basically, was how my business started.
You left South Africa to go to London, to grow up in London. You were very young when that happened. But the family, you would have gone back to South Africa for visits. Was that something that, how did it strike you? Did it leave an impression on you at a young age?
Yeah, I mean, my grandparents played a huge part in everything that I am today. And it was my happiest time was going back at Christmas. You know, I was very young when I came to London. I was two. So it wasn't really until I got a lot older. And then obviously was, you know, quite distressed as I got older about the politics and everything there. But as a country, its beauty is extraordinary. But once my grandparents died, I sort of didn't go back for many, many, many years.
School was a pretty tough time for you, Kelly. You have dyslexia. Was that really something that was very challenging and difficult?
Well, at the time, I didn't know I had dyslexia. I only discovered that when we found out my daughter had it. So, you know, when I was in my sort of 30s. So I think school was more challenging because I was very badly bullied at school. I hated school, absolutely loathed it, and couldn't wait. And sort of hence why I started a business at 16 and a half. I couldn't wait to run out the doors.
How bad was that bullying? Was it a single individual? Was it a number? Or how long did it go on for?
Basically, throughout the main school I was at, there was a sort of group of girls who bullied me. And it's quite interesting, many years later, when I was sitting in my studio in Lotts Road, and, you know, I'd had my business quite a few years and it was very successful. And this girl walked in, and it was one of the girls that had bullied me. And I remember going cold, literally, as though I was back in school. But I took the moment to kind of talk to her and confront her. And she was so devastated that that had happened. But from that moment on, it kind of cleared all of that fear that I had, which I'd carried with me up until that moment, because I think it does stay with kids.
Tragically, your father died when you were 16. And part of your response to that was that you went to South Africa and you did a number of different things. You toured with a band, and it was a time of real change for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think I dealt with my father's death until many, many, many years later. But running away and hanging out with this extraordinary jazz funk band in South Africa at a time when apartheid was so strong, was brave, but I didn't know any different. I was just doing what I wanted to do. But it was a kind of very cathartic time for me to try and clear my head. And then eventually my mother talked me into coming back to London, which I did. And that's when I started the business.
And at one point, while you were in South Africa touring, you ended up spending a night in the clink, in a police cell. What happened?
Yeah. Well, because of apartheid, you know, I was so young and kind of fearless. And so I snuck them all into the hotel that we were staying in before a gig that they were doing the next night. And we got into trouble for doing that. So we were kind of thrown in the clink, not for very long, I might add. But it was, you know, it was horrendous and it was wrong, and everything about it was part of my growing up, I suppose, and understanding what the world was like.
So you came back to London, you were still only 16, and you decided to set up in business yourself. What was your first gig?
So the first gig was a kitchen that I was doing for my stepfather's friend, which I did appallingly, I might add. I still try and find the pictures for it, but I can't.
What was wrong with it, Kelly?
Well, everything. I mean, it was just awful, and I just didn't handle it well, and the builder was drinking the whole time. But, you know, look, the client was happy in the end. But then a really good friend of mine knew a very famous racing driver who wanted his home doing up, and they were having a relationship, and I ended up doing up the whole house, and it was in one of the smartest streets in London, and I just put my, you know, running shoes on and just networked and pulled in builders and, you know, bought everything I needed. And that was really the beginning of my business, because from that, a lot of Grand Prix racing drivers employed me on the back of what I'd done there. And it was through word of mouth and what I had produced. And that was really the sort of moment that my business really began. And I never looked back. I only gave up work for a year when my daughter was born. Otherwise, I've worked every other day.
And there was another racing driving connection with that job, that the truck driver ended up being quite famous later on.
Yes. Damon Hill, yeah. So he was actually the guy that was delivering all of the cement and the bricks and the wood and all of the stuff to this particular job. And I often bump into him at charity events and things. And I always say, no one believes it. And he goes, no, it's true. It's true. It's just, it's so funny, isn't it?
What age were you at that stage when you were doing that job for the Grand Prix driver?
I was probably in my, 20, probably. 19, 20, yeah.
Still incredibly young.
Yeah.
Confidence, Kelly, in the interior design, ultimately the end product can be very subjective. You have to have and exude confidence, particularly if it's for celebrities who, at least outwardly, are very confident people. So you've got to be in the confidence game. You've got to say, I'm going to do something amazing for you. It's going to this room is going to change your life, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Where did that come from for you?
I think it was honestly down to the passion of loving what I did, and I love people. And part of the project is getting inside someone's head and understanding them. And I'm very good at that, and knowing how to ask the right questions, because you start a relationship with someone when you build their home. When it's a private residence, it's very personal, and you have to get on, and they have to trust you. And, you know, early on, I would have had an ego for sure, but the older I get and the older I've got, you know, it's about their home and it's about creating that experience for them.
And what kind of questions do you ask them? Because one question I read is you ask about music. How does that work?
Yeah, so I design to music. You know, every design has a sound. It's very difficult to explain. With some people, I'll say to them, what is the music that you want to feel when you're in your bedroom or in your living room? And I somehow manage to convert that into something, but I can't explain it to you. It just happens. And I can't design unless I have the music that I want on at the time.
And can you see the finished product before you start? How vivid
Yes.
is your visualization of that?
Yeah. So I have this ability to walk into a space and actually start to see it building in my mind as though it's on a computer. And when I've actually designed the space on paper, I can close my eyes and I can actually be in the space and walk around it. I can even move an ashtray, you know, 11 centimeters to one side. I can swap a light round. I can visualize everything in my head. And obviously today we have incredible computer generated images, but in the early days, I had to find people that could hand sketch them because I couldn't do it so well, because I could see everything, assuming when I first started that everyone could see what was in my head. So I learned very quickly that I had to produce drawings and sketches to show people. But yes, I can see everything in my mind.
I can see some downsides to the music approach. If you ask somebody about what they want the room to feel like, and they say Iron Maiden or AC/DC or whatever it is, do you think you could adapt and make it work?
Yeah, I could, but that's never happened to me, but maybe it will now.
Everybody says Burt Bacharach, do they?
No, but I'd love it if they did.
And what for you was the real turning point in the business? Because you went on then to branch out into homeware, into jewellery. Was there a moment when you look back on it that was really instrumental in changing that?
Yeah, I think, you know, in the old days, we didn't have Instagram and social media and all of that. And you would get journalists call you up, write articles about you. And I remember one day, in another article, there was somewhere they'd use my name as an adjective. This is very Kelly Hoppen, or it's very Hoppen. And it, you know, I was then approached by Conran to write my first book, and I won the Andrew Martin Award, and a lot of things happened in that year. And then brands started coming to me, and, you know, I sort of created the model that Martha Stewart had by doing licensing deals on products. And that's when the business really shifted and leaned a certain way. And, you know, it was a kind of tipping point. And I remember it happening. And there was an amazing journalist that wrote a piece in the Financial Times, How to Spend It. And that was the kind of pivotal moment that I was recognized. But that was the moment where I actually started to really enjoy and excel, because I didn't need to prove anything. Then I was just doing it because I loved it, rather than kind of trying to prove that I was okay.
How did it feel when someone said, oh, that's very Kelly Hoppen?
It was weird and it was amazing. And still today when it happens, I'm like, oh, you know, that's cool. But because I kind of live in a bubble in my studio, it's a real artisan studio. And I still look at it as a small business, even though it's not. And I'm really glad I do, because that way it works better.
And how big has the business become?
Oh, I mean, it's huge. It's a juggernaut now, but it's a manageable juggernaut. And, you know, the hardest thing is managing, you know, your business, your staff and everyone, to make sure everyone's happy. The design side is really easy. You know, I was out with some of my team yesterday and we're about to do something amazing. And I was like bouncing off the walls. And I thought, God, at 65, you're still like into all of this. And it makes me feel good, you know.
A lot of the big projects that you've done, whether it's on cruise ships or very glamorous hotels or doing work for very wealthy celebrities, it's fantastic work. And I'm sure it's well rewarded and interesting. Is there a sense then that it takes you further and further away from a mass market and from design for a more mass market? It's a very different world, isn't it?
It's a very different world. And in COVID, I was doing a lot of TV work with This Morning from home, talking to people, looking at their homes, telling them what to do. And then I wrote a book sort of about Get the Look. And I then really became obsessed with wanting to do a collection for the high streets. I launched a collection for Marks and Spencer, which is affordable luxury for the home. And it's been so well received and done so well. Literally, the site is half empty now because they're trying to get more product on. And it's filled me with so much happiness and joy that we've managed to do this. We've been working on it for about 18 months. And I'm so excited. It's something that I've wanted to do for a long time.
And also dealing, let's say, with celebrities and those kinds of clients, you must come across tricky clients who either can't really articulate to you what they want or decide afterwards that they really don't like it and aren't happy.
Well, I've never had people not happy, but whether you're a celebrity or not, everybody is the same. You cut them, they bleed the same way, and everyone's insecure when they're designing their home. It's just that's what happens. I am the client from hell when we redo our home. I can't make decisions. You know, whereas with a client, I'll go, no, 100%, that's what you should have. And I'm right. So I know personally what it's like to be on the other end. So it doesn't matter who you are, everyone's treated the same way. And so, you know, it's about finding that balance of feeling secure in someone's hands. But also, as I said earlier, it's about asking the right questions and being with every family member so you can see the dynamic and all the, you know, the shutters come down and you see real people, and that's when you can really start to design for people and take away the fear of it.
What about this expression, the queen of cream, which you has been attached to a few times? Is it something that you like to hear that? And what if somebody wanted something completely different to what you have designed before?
I've always been known for neutral, so it's just a tagline that people have used, but people can look on my website and in my books. I use a lot of colour as well as accents. But, you know, because of my brand identity now, people come to me for that look, but I can adapt it, and I do. So, yeah, I never really think about it, but I do like a cream sofa.
What for you? It makes good design. And is it something that anyone could do?
I think, I'm not sure everyone can do it. I think it's like, can anybody sing? Can anybody play the piano? You know, you can learn to do something, but I think design is so many aspects. It's not just finding a cushion and a sofa and a paint color. It's everything. For me, it's about the building blocks of building an experience in a home. For me, if somebody walks into a home I've designed and they go, wow, this just feels great, what is it? They can't put their finger on it. For me, that's great design.
Looking back on your career, Kelly, many people might feel that they have a good visual talent, a good eye. They might become good designers, but they wouldn't necessarily be able to build an international business. Did the business side of it come naturally to you, or was it something you had to work at?
No, it came naturally. I was clearly an entrepreneur as well as a designer, but I didn't know it. I obviously learned everything from scratch. My mother was a great mentor there for me. I remember my father, before he died, one day said to me, you know, when you go into business, make sure you always put your tax money to one side. It's not yours. You know, I remember little things that people had said to me, but I loved building a business. I love the whole aspect, the dual aspect of what I do every day. And it's just in me. I can't help it. I often sit with people and they go, can you help me with this? And I love to unravel people's businesses when they need help and can find solutions for them. It's just kind of the way my brain works.
And with the dyslexia, do you think that that might have played a part in your visual strengths, because you weren't necessarily totally at ease with what was going on in school, that it made you think more visually and see things differently?
100%. I often say to young kids when I lecture about dyslexia that this is not a disability, it's a plus. You have the ability to use your mind and your brain in a very visual way and use it. The fact that you can use spell check, you can use a computer, like don't let this define who you are. I 100% think it's helped me.
There's a bit of a fearlessness that comes across from you, Kelly, from even when your father died, going to South Africa at 16 and all the things you've done. Is there anything that scares you?
Yeah, flying, spiders, you know, lots of silly things. But I'm not a fear. I always think if you're fearful of things, you can't succeed in them. So you have to, you know, talk to yourself about what it is that you're frightened of. I don't think you can succeed through fear. You've got to take fear out of it.
Is there a lot more you'd like to do in business? Do you still have a lot of ambition?
Yeah, I've got loads on my bucket list of things and they just keep manifesting. You know, I want to do more hotels. A couple of things have just come through that I can't talk about yet that I've sort of wanted to do for a long time. So there's still loads of things. People are like, really? And I'm like, yep, Lots.
You sound like you really want to stay busy. Kelly Hoppen, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.